It's great, isn't it, that God's already been speaking to us this morning through our worship, and I think we'll find that mountains and hills are going to come up again, which is really exciting. Today we're going to be looking at the familiar story of David and Goliath, thinking about David's journey from boy to king, his journey into leadership, what we mean by great faith, and how to overcome through weakness. Before we look at the passage, though, I think that, broadly speaking, there are likely to be two extreme reactions to this story, with a breadth of variation in between. In the red corner, there are going to be those who love this story. Bring on the Goliaths, give me a pebble and let me at them. These are the sorts who approach the challenges of life with great confidence, a sense of excitement, a belief that in God I can do anything. They have great faith. In the blue corner, there are those who think, well, I should be like David. I should be able to overcome the mountains, but I'm not sure that I can. They, we will see, are more like Saul and the Israelites, who are terrified. Instead of great faith, there is great fear. I wonder where we will find ourselves standing this morning. So let's dive into our passage. It's 1 Samuel 17. You're probably going to find it easier to follow on the screen rather than in your Bibles, because I'm praising little bits just to, for sake of time. So, David and Goliath. We start with the Philistines having gathered their forces for war, and we see in the background two hills. On one hill, we have the Philistines, bold and brash. And on the other hill stand the Israelites and King Saul, fearful and intimidated, with a valley between them. Verse 4. Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. Now, I'd hope John was still going to be in the service so we could stand him up, because he's 6 foot six, and then we could add half of him again. But it's probably about up to this beam here, 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. That's about 9 stone, so he's literally carrying a small person into battle with him. He also wore bronze leg armor, and he carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds, just about a stone. Here then we have a picture of strength and might, if ever there was one. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. For 40 days the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. So we have aggression on one side and we have fear on the other. And into this story walks David, the youngest son of Jesse, takes food to his brothers, who are among the Israelite ranks. What David finds stirs his heart. Goliath is taunting the Israelites. David is horrified. What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? David's older brother hears him, and this makes me smile a little bit as a young sibling myself. When Eliab, David's older brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness. I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle.
Now what have I done? Said David. Can't I even speak? Despised and looked down upon, David feels that he can't do anything right. Yet it is this young David who finds his way into the presence of Saul, the current king. David said to Saul, Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, You're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a young man, and he's been a warrior from his youth. David replies with stories of his time as a shepherd, how he's killed lions and bears. To him, this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, Go, and the Lord be with you. We then get the familiar story of Saul trying to clothe David in his own armor, trying to match Goliath's armory with his own. But David will have none of it. I'm not used to these, he says. And instead, he takes 5 small stones from the stream and his sling, such that when David is approached by Goliath, Goliath despises him as well. He said to David, Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. David said to the Philistines, You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Notice what is happening here. It was common in those days to have a representative of each army to fight and so avoid bloodshed. It was also believed that the opposing gods of each side were represented by the 2 champions. Thus, the champion who had the strongest gods helping them would win. So Goliath curses David by his gods, verse 43. And David comes at Goliath in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel. In doing so, David sets himself apart from the other Israelites. So on the one hand, you have Saul and the Israelites terrified, showing a complete lack of faith in God and his promises that they would drive out the nations in front of him. They are fearful in spite of God's promises to be with them. On the other hand, we have David showing great faith in spite of the potential danger to him. We know what happens. David slings his stone and Goliath dies. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. The Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, has won. I feel we ought to have a little bit of a cheer there, maybe. Thank you. Here then, we're beginning to witness the emergence of a leader after God's own heart. We're beginning to witness the move from boyhood to kingship. And at this stage in his life, there are some things that we can emulate. What lessons can we learn about good leadership? Because it's important to recognize those qualities in those we follow. We don't want to be following a Saul. But it's also important to aspire to them ourselves. You know, we're all leaders in some way. Whether it be in our families, in our work, in church, or simply in our communities, where we're to lead the way in showing people what kingdom living looks like. So what qualities can we see in David? I'm going to throw a handful at you this morning, literally five, and I'm going to whiz through them. A, authenticity. We probably see this the most when Saul tries to put his armor on David. David uses what he is comfortable to use and through which he has known God's help on previous occasions. David needed what was authentic to him and not what anyone else put upon him. You know, true leadership isn't about imitation of what has gone before or how anyone else is doing it. It's having the confidence to step out in God, in what suits you, even if it is new and dangerous. You know, as we expand our leadership team, we're not looking for clones of Stephen. We're not looking for them to imitate everything about him. We're looking for people who will complement what he is doing, those who are sure in themselves of what they bring to the mix. We're looking for authenticity. B, being secure in his identity. In the face of Goliath's insults and those of his elder brother, he is not intimidated. He knows that God is with him. Not only that, but he shows leadership in calling the people back to their true identity. Come on, folks, we're the armies of the living God. C, confidence in God. David's confidence didn't rest in his own abilities, but in the power of the Lord Almighty. He gives us a lesson in how underdogs defeat much larger enemies because God is on their side and the battle is his. I heard the story of a father who used to arm wrestle with his 3-year-old son, except it was just his thumb that the kid would wrestle with. And the kid got so frustrated, he couldn't understand why he couldn't topple this thumb. What he was failing to realize was behind this thumb was the great hulking bulk of his father. David is the little thumb. But behind him is the great hulking bulk of his Father God. Too often we do look to our own strength and cunning. Think of Abraham and Ishmael. You know, God promises a son and it's just not happening. So with his own cunning, he works out what to do for himself and along comes Ishmael. We have to learn that it's not through our own power, but often through our weakness that we see God at work. I remember when I went off to university, I lived in a hall of residence and I was part of what was called the comprehensive scheme, which basically meant you got your food thrown in. But I hadn't been a Christian long and I didn't realize when you went to church, everyone invited you back for lunch. And when you were part of the Christian Union, there was always meals going on. Let's come round for a pizza. Let's do this. Let's do that. So actually, I didn't need to be part of this comprehensive scheme. I was wasting money. But I'd heard that the chap who had the power to take me off the scheme was really quite hard to get hold of and very reluctant to not have your money, basically. So for a moment, I plotted and I schemed. Well, I could book an appointment with him for something completely different and just happen to drop into the conversation. Oh, by the way, can I come off the comprehensive scheme? I thought, well, that's not going to be good enough. I'll actually need to invent some sort of allergy. You know, I'm allergic to this food, so I really can't eat what you're providing, so I've got to come off. Thankfully, I left it with God. The next day, this elusive man was walking across the car park. I walked alongside him. I turned to him and said, "Can I come off the comprehensive scheme?" He said, "What's your name?" He wrote it down. He said, "Yeah, that's fine. Off you go." We don't rely on our own cunning and on our own strength. We place our weakness in God and have confidence in him. D, doing for others, service. He's willing to intervene on behalf of his people. He stands in the gap. He is their representative. where no one else was willing to step in. And E, everyday faithfulness. Steve highlighted this so well last week. You know, David proved God on the domestic stage before he is thrust onto the world stage. In his experience as a shepherd, he had learnt the ways of God. I've killed lions, I can kill Goliaths. David has confident faith in God because he's found him to be dependable in the crises of life and in the secret places of worship. How do we know he worshipped there? Well, because of the Psalms, of course, the songs of David, a shepherd boy singing, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." There are so many lessons that we can draw from this passage. And I've heard many sermons in the past about how we can tackle life's giants. We can deal with marriage issues, job problems, and money issues. And the problem in all of this is that little word, we. We are not the focus. Christ is. It's about so much more than us. We are in this series looking at the life of David, how he started as a boy and matured to be a king, how his life points us forward to the Son of David, the greater king who was to follow. Just as David stands between his people and their enemies and strikes the decisive blow, this is exactly what Jesus has done for us. There is a saying, Christ is in the Old Testament concealed. Christ is in the New Testament revealed. The stories in the Old Testament are continually pointing us forward to Jesus. Until in Galatians 4 it says, when the time had fully come, God sent his Son. Until this point, God's people had been living under the law and failing, falling into sin. They'd been trying to be God's servant, but failing to be his servant people. They had been looking for a perfect king and failing to see a perfect sovereign. Jesus, when the time had fully come, came to conquer sin, to be the servant of all, and to set up his perfect sovereign rule on earth. What a story this is that we belong to. And how did Jesus come? Well, he came a bit like David. He chose to humble himself and work through weakness. Think about it. He was considered as being insignificant, not up to the task. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Like a root out of dry ground, he was despised and rejected by men. He overcame his enemies, but not by might or overbearing argument, throwing boulders at them. He mostly takes a little stone, asks a question, and gets them thinking. He doesn't hit them with the rule book, a heavy tome of the law. He drops a stone of a story and invites people to see themselves in that story. And if people choose not to follow him, he watches them walk sadly away. He doesn't compel them. Yes, he shows power, but usually with just a few words. Lazarus, come forth. Little girl, arise. Peace, be still. He fights a fight, but not with worldly weapons, not with power. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, like a lamb before its shearers is dumb, so he did not open his mouth. Unlike David, Jesus died. This is how he became king. Jesus stepped into the valley. With the might of Rome and the power of oppressive religion on one side, And on the other side, the poor and the oppressed and those who couldn't save themselves. And Jesus overcame through weakness. He overcame through his death on the cross. So ultimately, this story is not about our great faith. It's about our great Saviour. Great faith is not something that we possess. How much have you got? It's about putting our little faith in a great God and acting upon it. Remember the parable of the mustard seed. A tiny seed of faith can move mountains. You know, as Jesus was telling this parable, he was standing not far from Jerusalem, the city which is set on a hill, the city in which he would die. He didn't cast it into the sea. He climbed the hill. He died the death. And in doing so, conquered Goliath and everything that stands against us. Truly one greater than David is here. What a story we belong to. How then are we to live in the light of David's fight and Jesus' life? Well, after Goliath was defeated, the rest of the Israelites press in and put the Philistines to flight. This is what we're called to do. Jesus bound up the strong man, and we get to tidy up. The battle is won. The giants are defeated. We're not fighting for victory, but from victory. And we do this, I would suggest, in the same spirit that Jesus did. Like Jesus, our weapons are not physical. Just as Jesus fought with words and deeds and the cross, we fight with weapons like faith and peace and forgiveness and the word of God and prayer, coming against the spirit of this age with the spirit of the kingdom which is to come, a spirit that works through weakness. And we put on God's armor and fight. The story of great faith that we step into is a story of God's power made perfect in our weakness. Paul spoke to the Corinthians and said this, "Brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are." James Hudson Taylor, the founder of the China Inland Mission, had this to say. "All God's giants have been weak men who did great things for God because they reckoned on his being with them." Again, when I was a young Christian, I felt called to go on a mission to Portugal with a group of young people. When I say I felt called, I had a kind of feeling, oh, I ought to go. And I was really nervous. And all my friends gathered around me, very well-meaning, and said, "Jeanette, you'll be great. We believe in you. You can do it." Didn't touch my heart at all. I was grateful that they tried, but it didn't touch my heart at all. I went for a walk up the old railway, and God spoke to me through the story of Moses. When Moses is at the burning bush, and God says, "I've called you." And Moses says, "Mm-mm, send someone else. I can't do it. I've got stuttering lips." What did God do? Did he turn around to him and say, "Moses, you're the best. That's why I've called you. Because I know you can do this job. You know, your head's above everyone else." God didn't, did he? He turned around to Moses and say, "Go, and I will be with you." And that, friends, is what makes all the difference. It's not about what we possess. It's not about how much faith we've got or what gifts we can offer back to God. It's simply putting our little trust in a great God who promises to be with us. The story of great faith that we step into is the ability to be certain of the things we don't see, as it says in Hebrews 11. You see, we see with our natural eyes the giants, don't we? We need to see with the eyes of faith that Jesus has slain every giant. Warren Wiersbe, a Bible teacher, had this to say: when we walk by sight, we calculate everything from the human perspective, and this always leads to discouragement. But when we walk by faith, God comes into the equation, and that changes the results. The results may not always be favorable. Hebrews 11 talks about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed enemies. But it also talks about those who were tortured, refusing to be released, so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. This too is great faith. Great faith is not about being perfect Christians, strong and overcoming. It's about those who know they have to rely on God, whatever the outcome. Here is earthy Christianity, which we're going to be exploring in the coming weeks. With that in mind, let's return to the two types of people that we started with. Here we had the bold and the seemingly full of great faith. My encouragement to you this morning is to be careful. Always ask the question, on what am I basing my faith? Is it just my naturally confident character? Is it on my own strength? Am I actually more aligned with Goliath than I would like to be? Trusting in my armor and my resources. You see, Paul had to learn this lesson. In Corinthians, he tells us of his sufferings and the things he had to go through, concluding, "We despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt we had received the sentence of death. But this happened, that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God, who raises the dead." Paul could have relied on his strength, his ability. He'd been trained at the feet of Gamaliel. He knew loads. But through the experience of suffering, he learned that he couldn't rely on all of that. He had to rely on the God who saved him. Moses had this lesson to learn too, remember? Remember how he killed a man and then had to go out in the desert to be dealt with by God, to learn God's ways, to be his deliverer. We're going to learn in the coming weeks that David is going to go on to learn of his weaknesses and his vulnerabilities too. Here we have the fearful, the seemingly lacking in faith. My encouragement to us is don't look with envy on those that you think have great faith. We've learned that they have challenges and lessons to learn too, in order for God to use them. Rather, look for the stones that God has given you. Know God uses the weak and step out with your eyes fixed on him, knowing that he has won the battle. Wherever we stand today, we have much to learn from David about leadership, discipleship, and God dependence. How to live lives as servants, standing firm in our identity in him no matter who tries to intimidate us. Working with an authenticity that allows God to use us as us, not trying to be someone else. How to be faithful in the ordinary places God has placed us, drawing on his strength in the secret places to sustain us, living lives of worship and having confidence in God. For all types of people, we need to find our faith in him, not in our own strength. It's all about Christ, the great son of David. Let's finish as the music group comes up with the words of David himself. Psalm 18, speaking of his trust in God, David says this. You, Lord, keep my lamp burning. My God turns my darkness into light. Let those words bring hope to our hearts this morning. God's already spoken and said that there are people facing mountains who need to lift their eyes to him, to look back and see his faithfulness, and know that he will be with them as they journey forward. With your help, David says, I can advance against a troop. With my God, I can leap over a wall. Let's stand and let's celebrate together our great God this morning and fix our eyes on him as we sing of the splendor of our great King.